Marseille's Massilia Sound System are back after a seven-year absence. This is where Occitan meets Jamaica for what is fondly called Trauma Muffin, reggae of the troubadours. Sale Caractère, out now on Monviet Records, is their totally unique brand of music that appeals to kids and grannies alike. Indignation, resistance, fun and dance. That track, Casa Massilia, is the perfect example. The message is, you've had enough of being ripped off, smooth-talked, scammed, pushed around. Give it up. That's done with. Come to Massilia. It welcomes you in. And welcome in to this week's Music Planet here on BBC Radio 3. Coming up over the next hour, we've got music from Peru, Ivory Coast and South Korea. But at the heart of today's programme is a special focus on Scottish female Gaelic singers. And who better than Mary-Ann Kennedy, musician, broadcaster and friend of the programme, to throw the spotlight on some of these wonderful women. But before we head to Scotland, here are a couple of recent releases for you. The first is the debut album from Portuguese singer and part-time nurse Cristina Clara. Originally from the north of Portugal, she moved south and settled in Lisbon, where she's been singing in the fado houses of Alfama. For her, she says, fado is a window into other encounters. And at Lisbon's Tejo Bar, where she performs, she met musicians from Brazil, Angola and Cape Verde, some of whom she's collaborated with on her debut album, Lua Adversa. I'm going to play Novo Fado de Melancia, her take on Fado of the Watermelon, that was sung by one of Cristina's inspirations, Erminia Silva, who made her name not only as a Fado singer, but also as an actress in the early 20th century.
A melancia com a boca da mulher, que se o freguês desconfia, venha provar se quer ver. Esta Lisboa a fatia, sorriso à mão de beber. Desde o amanhecer ao entardecer, provar é beber da cidade a vida inteira numa fatia de verão. É faz renascer o barco maior. Feita canção, se a freguesa é mais arisca e recusa com desdém, tão doce que nem arrisca, que é coisa que nem cai bem. Quando a gente não petisca, mais há de ficar para alguém. Desde o amanhecer ao entardecer, provar é beber na cidade a vida inteira numa fatia de verão. É faz renascer o barco de mulher no sonho de quem quer. A roura, a fruta ligeira, Lisboa feita canção.
Acordes de una lírica guitarra, sos milonga de otros tiempos. Yo te vi crecer, prendí en la pollera de un bailongo guapo y rompedor, como jamás ha de volver. Nadie tal vez comprendió mejor las penas ni el sentir de mi barriada. Sin embargo, te olvidaron y en el callejón tan solo una guitarra te recuerda, criolla como tú, y en su gemir tiembla mi ser. Vuelvo cansada de tu. Y en mi corazón lloran los años. Mi vida busca tan solo la tranquilidad del viejo barrio. Y encuentro todo cambiado, menos tu canción, milonga mía. El progreso ha destrozado toda la emoción de mi arrabal. Notas van llenando de tristeza el alma mía. He cruzado las caricias de la única sincera. Ya con una primavera que no floreció, mi longa ya no puedo continuar, el llanto me venció. Quiero olvidar y pienso más.
The Peerless Voice of Peru, Susana Baca, and her take on an Argentine classic from the 1930s, Milonga de Mis Amores, I Long for My Loves. It's one of the tracks on her album Palabras Urgentes, Urgent Words, that I first played a couple of months ago, that was released to mark her 50 years in the business. And what a career she's had as a teacher, experimental musician, cultural chronicler of Peru's Afro-Peruvian population, and even 10 years ago as Minister of Culture, the first person of African heritage to hold that post. You're listening to Lapa Katari this afternoon on Music Planet here on Radio 3. This week, we've got a bit of a treat for you because my guest on the programme today is a musician and broadcaster who comes from Gaelic music royalty. It is indeed Mary Ann Kennedy. She's here to talk about Scottish female Gaelic singers, specifically about three remarkable women who lived at the end of the 19th century and start of the 20th, Frances Tolmie, Mary McPherson and Jessie McLachlan. Why these women? Why are they important?
They're each of them remarkable women in their own right, in a world where songs, poetry was made to be sung. So if you wrote a poem until the middle of the 20th century in Gaelic, if you wrote a poem, it was made to be sung. And it's a very male-dominated world. However, some of the most significant people have been women. Mary Vaughan na Noran, Mary McPherson, is probably the perfect example of that. But then Mary was documented by Frances Tolmie, and Frances Tolmie was alive at the time Jessie McLachlan was travelling the world and singing Gaelic songs. So they have a kind of connection.
It sounds as though there's a great kind of passing of the baton between the three of them across the generations.
Indeed. And apart from the fact that Frances notated one of Mary Vaughan's songs from the tradition, there is no particular connection between them. But I think it's really important to celebrate the fact that women and women's connections and women passing on songs was part of the repertoires that are still being sung on stages today.
So we're going to start with Mary McPherson, who you've called, is it Mary Mór na n-Oran, Great Mary of the Songs?
That's herself.
She was from the Isle of Skye. And in fact, this year, it's the 200th anniversary of her birth. Am I right in saying that she didn't actually start writing songs until she was in her 50s?
Indeed. And it was quite a traumatic incident that gave rise to her starting to write. She was in service in Inverness and she was unjustly accused of stealing from her employer and she was imprisoned. And it was while she was in prison in Inverness that she started to write. And her songs thereafter came to be associated with campaigning.
So was it while she was in prison that she actually learnt to write? Or did you mean that that was the time when she started writing her own songs?
That is the time that she started to make her own songs. We don't always know whether composers of songs are literate or not. It's not particularly relevant here, but we always talk about, in Gaelic, about people making songs rather than writing them.
So she became a rallying voice for crofters, is that right, in the struggle against what was called the Highland clearances, these evictions of tenants from the land?
Forcible eviction from the land in order to let the landlords make what they would of that land, of those estates, without having to consider human inhabitants. People were forced overseas into the cities. And there was, throughout the middle of the 19th century, a rising tide of people that just said enough is enough. And Mary Vaughan was very much their, I guess she was their spin doctor, she was their Alistair Campbell, but she sang the songs, rallied them to the cause, and to this day she is synonymous with the campaign for the rights of security of tenure in land, in crofting land in the Highlands.
Well, we're going to hear one of her songs now, and it's sung by your mum, I believe, in this recording.
Oh, Nirvamiog, this is such a beautiful song. And Mum Kenna, she just associates so closely with this. It's Mary Vaughan talking about the Isle of Skye, about her homeland, and wanting to see the land as it was when she was young, where people were engaged with the land, where husbandry was mutually supportive, rather than everything being just scraped bare.
A song written by Mary McPherson, sung by Kenna Campbell, the mother of my guest on Music Planet today, Mary Ann Kennedy. A song that represents McPherson's deep association with Scottish Island life, in particular that of the Gaelic-speaking areas. Mary Ann, the next song that you've chosen of McPherson's is about a game of shinty that she watched in Glasgow back in 1876. What is shinty?
Ah, shinty is just the best game on the planet.
Of course.
It looks like violent hockey. It's a ball and stick game that is strongest in the Highlands and Islands of Scotland. And Mary was a huge fan. Skye was and is a hotbed of shinty playing. And I guess if she'd been alive today, she would have been the editor of the number one fanzine for shinty. And this song is gorgeous because it is a commentary. It's the first ever Gaelic sports commentary. It does the build up to the game. It does the match commentary and then it does the after play. It's just such good fun.
So I'm curious, Mary-Ann, was or is shinty a game played by both men and women, or was it just men?
It would have been the guys at the time that Mary was alive. When you listen to this song, she talks about walking onto the pitch alongside the guys that she was admiring in detail and giving them great counsel on how to carry on the match. But it wouldn't have been a woman's thing at the time. So she was quite unique.
shut kid in Maroon, you hook a mohon, she shop the noodle, saw the sting, shut kid in Maroon, you hook a mohon. Shut kid in Maroon, and cross when I'm sad, just sat the watch, and y'all the shut kid in Maroon, you hook a mohon, she shop the noodle, saw the sting, shut kid in Maroon, you hook a mohon. San gara chon chagan y chyni chyn gomam sa chyre gan yemen an dal tu lao shat gyd yn maru nyo hoca ma hwn chi shat gyd yn maru nyo hoca ma hwn Nar chanig yn tank yn chyni chy sain sfa caman yn maig a chod gyd yw shat gyd yn maru nyo hoca ma hwn chi shat gyd yn maru nyo hoca ma
Mary-Anne Kennedy herself there, and the Glasgow Shinty, inspired by the writings of Gaelic singer and songwriter Mary McPherson, who was born 200 years ago this year. Mary McPherson died in 1898 when recording was in its infancy. So I'm guessing that there aren't any recordings of her, actually, are there?
There aren't, but a couple of her songs were notated by song collectors. But it's just at that tantalising change in how people were collecting music and song at the time.
But there are some recordings of the next artist you've chosen, Frances Tolmie. And for a taster, here's an extract of her singing recorded in 1906. It is very scratchy, but you can still hear the voice ring out clearly. So, Mary-Anne, this woman, Frances Tolmie, another native of Skye, would she have known Mary McPherson? I mean, would their paths have crossed?
Their paths definitely did cross. Frances Tolmie was solidly of the middle classes, but totally was immersed in the culture and the language that surrounded her. And she made it her job to go out amongst almost exclusively women and collect songs that they were singing, write them down. And Marie Vaude, Mary McPherson, was one of these ladies.
So was Frances actually a song collector more than a singer herself?
I guess she was. She was a very modest person. My Shenner, my grandfather, actually remembers hearing her singing at a Cayley in Dunvegan on the Isle of Skye, which is our part of the world. She would sing out, but she was not about getting recognition for herself. She really just wanted to capture the songs.
Well, you've chosen two songs from that collection. It's called 105 Songs of Occupation from the Western Isles of Scotland, first published in 1911. The first track that we are going to play is Margaret Stewart and Alan MacDonald. My Gaelic is not up to speed. Would you introduce this?
Talag Nihuishke, the lullaby of the water horse, or sometimes they're known as kelpies.
I'll let you hold a hole, hold a hole.
Modern takes on two very different songs that make up part of the collection of Gaelic songs collected by Francis Tommy, published in 1911. I wonder how Tommy would have felt that more than 100 years later, these songs would still be finding a voice. Well, Marianne, the third and final female artist you want to share with us, Jessie McLachlan, someone that really is close to your heart. I mean, you were part of the effort to raise funds to restore her headstone, weren't you, in Cathcart Cemetery just this year?
Cathcart is to Glasgow what Highgate would be to London, I guess. One of those Victorian garden cemeteries. And it's less than 10 minutes away from where I grew up. And I had no idea until last year that Jessie McLachlan was buried there.
Her full name was Jessie Niven McLachlan. I mean, would it be fair to say she was the first Gaelic pop star or record star?
Absolutely, absolutely. If you put her alongside the people that she shared a stage with, names that would be far more recognised, like Harry Lauder and James Scott Skinner, they were global superstars of their time. She was likewise. But because she was a woman, and because she died relatively early, her whole story had kind of disappeared for us until we started this little campaign to reinstate the Celtic cross that is there as a memorial for her, looking out from the part of Glasgow where she lived latterly and looking back home to the Argyllshire Hills where she grew up.
And she was the first woman to record on vinyl?
The first human being to be documented in audio, in any shape or form, in Gaelic, yes.
Wow. Well, she travelled to America and New Zealand, which must have seemed like a world away in those days as a singer, but she did remain true to her Gaelic roots. I mean, it didn't turn her head, did it?
Oh, absolutely. And it would have been extremely difficult for her to do what she did at the time. Her musical director and her chaperone and her companion was her husband. And so they were very much a double act. It enabled her to do what she did. But it didn't matter where she went, in New Zealand, in Australia, America, in Canada. Wherever she went, she made a point of seeking out emigres, people who maybe hadn't heard their native language since they left, and would just go and ceilidh with them, converse with them so that they could hear their own language. It's one of the most touching things I've learned about her.
Well, let's hear a bit of that 1899 recording. It is, of course, more than a little scratchy, but it's just so brilliant that it still exists. Marianne, what will we hear Jessie singing in this?
It's a really pretty little song. It would have been very popular in the 19th century. It's still sung to this day. It's not the heaviest piece of poetry you've ever heard, but it would have been something that people would love to pick up the chorus with.
The first ever recording of a Scots Gaelic song sung by Jessie McLachlan, made in 1899. Marianne, we were talking about Jessie's headstone that you've been raising funds for. She was pretty young when she died, wasn't she? I mean, she was just 49 in 1916?
Yeah, she was younger than I am now. She was in France at the time of the outbreak of the Great War. She and her husband then had to, in very quick order, try to make their way back home to Scotland. And they had to travel down into Spain, got passage on a tramp steamer. It was a very traumatic journey, and sadly, it broke her health. She did not sing after that.
But she did leave quite a legacy, hasn't she?
She has, and I actually think that now that we've been given the chance, it's 100 years since that memorial was erected. Now that we have the chance to revisit, we get to think about a woman who was a very fine musician, who went out and did stuff that women didn't really do. And it's also a great role model for young Gaelic speakers living in a world where a minority language is not necessarily always very well regarded. She's just such a role model on so many levels.
Marianne, it has been great to have you on the programme today, and thank you for sharing with us some of these wonderful women who've blazed a trail and carved a name for themselves in Gaelic music and kept the language and its music so much alive today. We're going to end our Gaelic journey with that song that Jessie McLachlan recorded in 1899. But this time it's going to be the version that you and Finlay Wells on guitar recorded at her grave in Cathcart Cemetery in Glasgow.
And this was on the actual centenary of the unveiling of the Celtic cross that marks her grave. And it was such a special thing to do because, like all these Victorian garden cemeteries, it's a place where people go to walk. And we had so many people passing us by who said, how lovely that we know why that particular stone is where it is and that there's music happening right there in the middle of Glasgow.
Make it a high hook, hot the albino style, yeah, make it a high hook.
Marianne Kennedy there, accompanied by Finlay Wells on guitar. And thanks again to Marianne for coming on the programme today to shine a light on three remarkable pioneers in Scots Gaelic music. And if you want to dip into some more Gaelic music, Marianne Kennedy is going to be on BBC Alba as part of those Trad Awards that are taking place tonight. This is Music Planet. I'm Lopa Katari. Heading to a completely different time and place now, 1980 and Abidjan, the capital of the Ivory Coast. Ebony Band were all the rage in the 80s, and they were lucky enough to be invited to Los Angeles to record an album with some of the best Motown session musicians of the day. The recording came about when Motown's recording engineer and producer, Art Stewart, travelled to the Ivory Coast to check out the music scene, having been tipped off about Ebony Band. Art already had an impressive CV, having produced Marvin Gaye's Gotta Give It Up and Rick James's Come and Get It, so it wasn't hard for him to persuade Motown's finest to join the Ivorian musicians in the studio. The result was a high-octane album with songs sung in Wolof and English. At the time, label executives, though, weren't convinced that an American audience were ready for this kind of mixture. So, whilst the album received a limited release in the Ivory Coast, it never got the global release it deserved nor expected. Well, the Canadian label, We Are Busybodies, has now reissued the Ebony Band self-titled debut album, much to producer Art Stewart's pleasure. Sadly, Stewart passed away a few weeks ago at the age of 82. But you can hear now what he achieved with the Ebony Band, with its funk-influenced West African sounds, in this song, Desire, an absolute gem.
You
hot and steamy West African funk from 1980, an Ebony band with Desire, a song from their debut album, which has been reissued on We Are Busybodies. And so to our classic artist, who this week is Syrian singer known as Sabah Fakhri. Fakhri was born in 1933 in Aleppo and was famous for his performances of traditional song forms that date back to the Middle Ages. The son of a sheikh, Fakhri early on became an expert in Quranic recitation, and one of his first jobs was as a Syrian state muezzin, reciting the Islamic call to prayer. He dreamt of going to Italy as a youngster, but stayed on in Syria to study at both the Academy of Arabic Music of Aleppo and the University of Damascus. Well, one of his earliest performances was in 1948, the year of his graduation, for President Shukri al-Kuwatli, the first leader of post-independence Syria. Well, over the course of several decades, he performed in almost every continent. He even earned himself a place in the Guinness Book of Records in 1968 at a concert in Caracas, Venezuela, where he sang for 10 hours without stopping. Now, that is what I call stamina. For Fakhri, interacting with the audience was important. And not only did he want them to understand the music and the words, but he often performed with the lights on so that he could see the public. I'm going to play you a recording of him live in Paris in 1978 at the Palais des Congrès. And his rapport with the audience is very clear to hear. We don't have 10 hours, but we will hear two songs he was famous for singing. First, Yatira Tiri, followed by Yamal El Sham.
Yeah.
Classic artist this week, Syrian singer Sabah Fakhri, who passed away a few weeks ago at the age of 88. Thanks to my producer, Michael Rossi, and to Marvin Ware on sound. I'll be back on the 1st of January when we have a Womex special to kick off the new year. To play us out today is music from a recent session that we did with Korean duo Dalum, who were in London recently for the K Music Festival. The duo take two of Korea's traditional string instruments, the kayagum and the gamungo, on all sorts of unexpected musical peregrinations. Dalum's recent studio session was broadcast a fortnight ago here on Music Planet, but we saved one number from that recording for later. So here it is, Dalum, and a piece called The Waves. I'll see you in the new year next week. Catherine Tekel will be in the Music Planet driving seat. Till then, goodbye. Thank you.
The Waves from the South Korean duo Dalum. Music Planet was presented by Lopa Qatari. The producer was Michael Rossi.
Afternoon Concert. A perfect mix of brilliant performances every weekday afternoon. Next week, experience the thrill of live music brought to you from across the nations by BBC Ensembles. There's shimmering Advent music from the BBC Singers. An intriguing mix of ancient and modern from the BBC Philharmonic and the violinist Daniel Puro. And collaborations with some of the most exciting soloists around, including the violinist Pekka Kuusisto and the brilliant young pianist Tom Borrow. Just a taste of some of the exclusive live performances on Afternoon Concert, next Monday to Friday from 2 on Radio 3 and BBC Sound.
Next on Radio 3 at 5 o'clock, it's J to Z with Julian Joseph.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we have something special down here at Birdland this evening. A recording for Blue Note Records. When you applaud for the different passages, your hands go right over the record there. So when they play them over and over throughout the country, you may be someplace and say, well, that's my hand on one of those records. I dug down in Birdland. Over and over throughout the country, you may be someplace and